So last week, we decided to take the last step and in our search for a theory of quantum gravity that reproduces, or it gets very close to what we see in nature. And our first attempt didn't work because we only had bosons. So everything seems to be working fine. The theory, okay, it has more dimensions. It seems to be a consistent quantum theory of gravity, but it only had bosons. So we had to find fermions. What we did was to put them by hand on the wall sheet, okay, and decided to study them. The fermions we put in were a little bit funny in the sense that these fermions were fermions on the wall sheet, but they were what from the point of view of the space-time? Do you remember? What were they? In what representation were they? The fermions we put in by hand. Do you remember? What kind of index did they have with respect to space-time? They were actually vectors, just like the x's, okay? Very good. So we went on and decided to just explore that model. You found in the tutorial, you found that the model we studied actually had an extra symmetry we didn't expect, which is supersymmetry, that exchanges bosons and fermions. And associated to that, there was a conformal symmetry and a superconformal symmetry. We discussed last time that we had to impose constraints. So when we quantize a theory and we solve equations of motion, we also have to take into account the constraints. Okay? Very good. And the punchline last week was that we indeed found a fermion in space-time. Okay? Who was the fermion?
Gravitino.
Well, no, we still haven't found a gravitino yet. We will today, but no, we didn't find a gravitino. But how we... So... So what is the first fermion we found last week? It was a ground state of which sector? The Ramon sector, right? Do you remember we got all excited because the ground state in the Ramon sector we had the zero modes of the oscillators satisfied almost a Clifford algebra, and from there we concluded that the Ramon sector, the vacuum state, the ground state, could not be unique, had to be degenerate, and not only that, it had to be a vector of how many, of what size. It would be 2 to the d. But now we know better than that. We know that d will have to be 10 in order to preserve conformal and superconformal invariants. So now we know that our vacuum in the Ramon sector has to be a spinner of SO9,1. So it could be something of dimension 2 to the fifth. Okay? Now, is that representation irreducible? Well, remember, in an even number of dimensions, we can also define what is called here we can actually give it a name. We can say gamma 11, right? So gamma 11 defines the chirality. We can define a projection operator. Gamma 11 anti-commutes with all the gammas, and gamma 11 squared is equal to 1. Therefore, you can define a projection operator and project out states depending on the eigenvalue with respect to this object. Okay? So spinners with plus minus eigenvalue with respect to this would be called Weyl spinners with positive or negative chirality. Using this projection operator, we can split this into So how many dimensions will we have? We'll have 2 to the 4 and 2 to the 4 is 16, okay, of positive and negative chirality. So this would be the reducible representations here. Yes. Actually, dimension 10 will be for the whole theory. Sorry, what do you have in your notes? That is not for the NS sector. We didn't compute it for the R sector. But it turns out to be the same dimension. The dimension is 9 plus 1 for the whole superstring. Okay? Of course, we didn't actually do it. I mean, the rigorous way to do it is once again in the Lycon gauge, check Lorentz invariance. Okay? If you did that, then you will also find that the dimension will have to be 9 plus 1. What we did was a very hand-waving argument. Do you remember? Our zeta function regularization. That was a little bit of hand-waving. But it was only to motivate the number 10. So if you do the computation fully, you will find 9 plus 1. OK. So that was very exciting. We got this guy. We also said that, well, just getting a spinner was not enough to say that we got something that looks like a fermion in space-time. What else did we need? The Dirac equation, and that came from where? And that came from the constraints, right? Very good. So we were all very happy with the Ramon sector. And I told you, well, you wouldn't be so happy with the Navier-Schwarz sector. Why was that? What is the ground state of the Navier-Schwarz sector? It's a tachyon. Remember, here we're all doing the open string. What was the first excited state? Well, it turns out to be massless. Okay? And it's a vector. Remember, this index tells us that it's a vector under SO8, which is the little group for massless particles. So we just have a vector for SO8. Nobody else there in the sector. And therefore, this guy must be massless from the point of view of, so it must be massless for it to be a consistent representation of SO9,1. OK? Very good. Now, Anton mentioned the gravitino. Well, the gravitino, as the name indicates, has something to do with gravity. But remember, we found gravity in the bosonic string in which kind of strings? Opens or closed strings? The graviton. Where did we find the graviton? Did we find it in open strings when we quantized the open string? Very good. In the closed string. So we still haven't done the closed string. But we will today. And we will indeed find a graviton. And we will find a gravitino to make Anton happy. Now, what did we say about the gravitino last time? Whenever you have a gravitino, what is this guy doing? A massless gravitino. So a gravitino, once again, from the point of view of SO9,1, just has a representation. Remember, it's a spinner. It's a funny spinner because it has a vector index too. So it has tons of components. But if we want to think about it as a massless spinner, as a massless gravitino, we have to reduce the number of degrees of freedom dramatically. What do we have to use in order to reduce the number of degrees of freedom? Whenever you have something and you say, well, I know that my physical state only has less degrees of freedom, so what do? You search for a gauge symmetry to get rid of them. In the case of the gravitino, what was the gauge symmetry? We did it last time in two dimensions, but the same logic applies here. Do you remember last time we had the chi field on the wall sheet, and we said this was a gravitino, and we needed local? What was the symmetry? No, in this case we needed to make local. Remember, this guy is a fermion. Now we need a symmetry that it's a fermionic degrees of freedom. It would have to be supersymmetry. So it's local supersymmetry. Okay? Now, we haven't done it, but we will do it. So if you have a theory, remember, we are doing open strings here. But last time we discussed that open strings will also have channels where closed strings propagate. So a theory of open strings must contain closed strings. Otherwise, it's not consistent. So if the closed string theory will have a gravitino, for the gravitino to be consistent, a consistent theory, we will need supersymmetry. Okay? You might say, well, why one thing implies the other? It's like if you have a theory of a massless particle, of a massless gauge boson in four dimensions, say, and you couple to it something that doesn't fit into a full gauge multiplet. Imagine you put, say, I don't know, some matter field, but only half of it. So you break gauge invariance. Is that good or bad? It's going to be terrible, right? Because we said that gauge symmetry is something that you don't even want to break by anomalies. It's something that you want to preserve all the time. Otherwise, your theory becomes completely inconsistent. Likewise, in this case, local supersymmetry is something that you have to keep because it's a gauge symmetry, okay? It's a gauge invariance. Otherwise, the theory will become inconsistent. Now, we got a problem here. And it looks like a terrible one. So in fact, the whole theory of a string theory, I would say, has been more or less the same story. You think you're making progress, everything is looking great, until you hit a brick wall. And then you say, gee, maybe I should abandon the whole thing and then start all over again. And then somebody brilliant comes out with the answer, or a group of people come out with a way of go around or just pass through the brick wall. Here, you would say, well, it's time to give up. Because in our theory of open strings, the ground state here is a tachyon, while the ground state here is a fermion. How can I have supersymmetry? There is no supersymmetry. And in the closed string sector, we will find the gravitino. So this is already a contradiction. Okay? So this theory, just like that, is plainly non-consistent. It's not consistent. So what do we do? Do we just give up? Well, as I said, I'm sure some people did. But some people did not. And the people who didn't, or some of the people who didn't, their names are Gliosi, Shirk, and Olive, okay? They came out with a brilliant idea. That is now called, everybody calls it the GSO. That's why I don't remember the names. That's bad, but sorry. Everybody calls it the GSO projection. What's the idea? Well, the idea is to introduce some operator, okay, that defines some sort of, it's like an R symmetry or a parity symmetry in four dimensions. When people want to get rid of some states, sometimes they define some new symmetry, discrete symmetry, and then declare that your spectrum or your theory only contains the guys with eigenvalue plus with respect to that operator. Okay? So they came out with a projection operator. The operator is the following. In the NS sector, the GSO operator is defined by, let me do it like this because otherwise you will not see what this NS. This is nothing but the fermionic number operator. Okay. All it does is to count how many excitations are there in your physical state. Okay. And this minus sign is not a typo, it's actually there, and you will see why we need this minus sign. Now, in the R sector, they define a different operator, and it's in fact gamma 11 minus 1 to the FR, where FR is what you would expect, the same thing that counts states, but in the R sector. Yes. This only goes from half to infinity. No, there is no R here, because I want something that only counts how many Bs are there. Okay? I want an operator that tells me my physical state, this physical particular physical state has 27 Bs. It doesn't matter. That's the only thing that matters. Okay? Yes. Oh, that's what you meant. Oh, I thought there was the R here that we had in the number operator. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. And here. And of course, there is a sum over I. Okay. Very good. So now, the idea is to declare that the physical spectrum, physical states, are obtained by only looking at the physical, at the states with plus eigenvalue under this operator and some choice of eigenvalue for this operator, okay, that we will make later. But the physical states in the NS sector must have plus 1. Okay? Of course, you would say, well, I mean, maybe this looks like put in by hand, right? Because if you do that and you look at the tachyon will have a GSO eigenvalue minus 1. So you would say, oh, yeah, I got rid of the tachyon. Okay? Yes, that's true. But the remarkable thing is that this projection turns out to be consistent with interactions. Not only that, but it also does something remarkable. As we will see now, it will make the massless states of the theory to have the same number of bosonic and fermionic degrees of freedom, and thus a requirement for supersymmetry. And not only that, tomorrow in the tutorial you will see that it actually holds to all orders in the number operator. So all the states, all the massive states, will magically combine with the GSO projection. Once you take that into account and you project out the bad states and keep only the good states, you will find that the total number of bosons and the total number of fermions in each state, no matter how deep you go into the oscillator expansion, they will have the same number, okay? So, but let's do it here only for the massless state. So clearly, in the NS sector, we will have how many degrees of freedom? We will have 8 degrees of freedom. So we have 8 bosons. So this one is gone by the GSO projection. This one is allowed by the GSO projection, okay? Because we have one B, and I told you that this operator, all it does is to count the number of Bs. So we have one, and we have plus. That's very good. Now let's go here. Well, if we just take the vacuum at face value, we will have, remember, now we are considering these as representations of the little group. And remember, we found that this guy was massless too, right? The vacuum state satisfied the Dirac equation for a massless particle, not for a massive particle, okay? So under SO8, we have 2 to the 4 that splits into 2. Okay. Now remember, this plus minus will correspond to the eigenvalue with respect to the gamma matrix. Now here, this sounds a little bit confusing because I have gamma 11, okay? But remember, this guy is still a spinner, too, in 11 dimensions, in 10 dimensions, sorry, okay? Now the chirality goes down from 11 from SO9,1 to SO8. So if we have plus or minus here, it would also correspond to the same chirality plus or minus here. So depending on the value of this, depending on what we want to do with this operator, we can declare it to be plus or minus for the vacuum state. We will be choosing one or the other, okay? So what do we do for the Ramon sector? Well, it's your choice. I don't think I want to be playing the game again of giving you the choice of choosing plus or minus, because you will always choose the one I don't want. So actually, in this case, it doesn't matter. So you can choose a vacuum state to satisfy GR to be plus 1. Okay? It doesn't really matter. So we'll choose it plus 1. So that means that we have fermions. So the R sector gives us a fermion, okay, that has 8 degrees of freedom. Now the NS sector, and this is all massless. The NS sector gives us, from the NS plus 1, gives us a vector, which is also massless. And there is nothing else in the spectrum at this level, at the level of massless objects. So we found that this GSO projection precisely makes the open stream, at least at the massless level, something that is consistent with supersymmetry. Okay? We have the same number of degrees of freedom. Now you may ask, well, last time with the bosonic stream, we wrote down the low energy effective action. For the theory. Now note something interesting. With this projection, we did something remarkable. We got rid of the tachyon, which was something annoying, right? Some people didn't like it very much. Okay. I said, well, it wasn't such a terrible thing after all, but it's good not to have it anyhow. Okay, so you don't have one less thing to worry about. So our theory doesn't have a tachyon. Okay. But you might wonder, what is the low energy effective action of our friends here? So here we have a gauge boson. It has to be gauge boson, otherwise we will have too many degrees of freedom. Remember, this index runs from 9, it's 9 plus 1 index. And here we will have a Majorana spinner. Majorana Weyl spinner. Okay? So what do? Turns out that the effective action is not that difficult. Well, let's use these gammas as a convention. Okay. So this action doesn't look that terrible. And in fact, it's not that complicated to check that it's invariant under supersymmetries of this form. Where that's the definition of these guys. It's just the antisymmetric product or the commutator of gamma matrices. Now, why am I writing this? Well, first of all, just to say that, well, it looks very simple in 10 dimensions. Now, let's do something interesting. Let's try to count the number of states, the total number of states we have. Well, it's not difficult to count. We just have 16. Yes? It's a commutator of two of them. In general, whenever you see a gamma with many, many indices, what they mean is the anti-symmetric product of all those gammas. Okay? That's in general. Now, why am I doing this? Have you ever seen before? Well, we did it only as a game, right? I proposed it as a little game for you guys to build in four dimensions a theory that also had a total of 16 degrees of freedom. 8 of them were for bosonic, and 8 of them were fermionic. Do you remember which theory was that? When I told you to play with the supercharges? Did anybody try to play with the supercharges acting on the states with particular helicities and so on? Try to see what happens. Well, let me remind you. Maybe you did, but you forgot. In four dimensions, we said that we had supercharges, right? And we could have many supercharges, as many as we want, okay? And we call this n the number of supercharges, We call this the number of supersymmetries in four dimensions. Okay? And we acted on, this was the helicity. We said that Q could actually increase the helicity of a state. Okay? So when we started with this guy, with a state with minus helicity, and we applied, say, QI to it, we got something of this form. How many states were here? There were n, and so on. We kept going, right? Did you try to do this? There was a very particular value for n in which the last state, which was, of course, a total of n guys, right, with all possible indices, had helicity plus 1. What was that value of n? So this one, sorry, this is minus 1. So this state has helicity minus 1/2. Okay? So you keep increasing the helicity by putting more and more guys. So you end up having this number of states. So let's write here, the next one is QI Qj acting on minus 1. This gives helicity 0. Then the next one was QQQ ijk minus 1. And the last guy contains all of them. This one has helicity plus 1. This one has helicity 1/2. OK? And that is if we choose n to be 4. We stop here. Okay? How many states we found here? We found 1. Here we found 4. Here, remember how many we get? It's the anti-symmetric product, right? So here we get 6, here 4, and here 1. So how many states we get in total? So 16 states. How many fermions and how many bosons? Well, these are bosons. And these are fermions. What do you think this 6 means? Anyone? These are the scalars, okay? This guy and this guy come together to form a gauge field. There are the scalars. Okay, let's put an index, a scalar index from 1 to 6. These are the bosons, and then there are the fermions. Any significance to the 6? Yeah, there is an F. the theory will have an SO6 symmetry. Yeah, very good. Now, our superstring theory is defined in how many dimensions? In 10. How many dimensions we actually experience? 4. Right? We see only 4 dimensions. What's the difference? 6. Of course, there are many sixes. There are many ways of getting 6. But actually, this one is exactly that 6. Why is that? Because, you see, this guy, this A mu, has 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Has this many components, right? Imagine that this is a space-time. Sorry. This is a space-time, right? 0, 1, 2, 3. Our space-time. And imagine that you compactify the remaining ones, a la Kaluza-Klein, on tori, right? You just compactify every other dimension on a circle and do a Kaluza-Klein reduction, okay? From the four-dimensional point of view, the remaining components of this guy will be what? From the four-dimensional Lorentz group. What would these guys be? Those components. Scalars. How many of them? 6 of them. Well, it turns out that n equals 4 super Jamials in 4 dimensions is the dimensional reduction of this theory. Okay? Of course, here we only have a U1 theory. We can make it more interesting. But the only reason I'm mentioning this is that checking that n equals 4 super Jamials is actually invariant under all supersymmetries is a very complicated exercise. While checking that this is invariant is not that terrible. And now, if you can show that one goes to the other by dimensional reduction, then you're done. Okay? Very good. Let's see. What else do we want to say? Any questions? But you would say, well, we didn't come here to do gauge theory. We came here to do gravity. So what do we have to do to get gravity? Now we know, right? We were just doing the open string sector. So we will have to study the closed string sector in order to get gravity. Okay, let's see. So I encourage you to actually study this a little bit more and see how the dimensional reduction will actually bring you down to a Lagrangian. And the Lagrangian for n equals 4 super Jamials is written almost anywhere, okay? As you will see in I don't know how many weeks, you will have a second string theory course where you will study just this theory. And funny enough, I've been making fun of saying that we only have gauge theory here, but it turns out that this theory will end up being completely equivalent to a gravity theory. But that's something that we will not do. Okay, so let's move on. Let's go to the closed string sector. Or better yet, closed superstring. Okay. So remember, last time when we varied the action, just to make Maita happy, I have to specify clearly whether we are in the worksheet or the space-time, right? So let's say this is the worksheet action, okay? The previous one was in space-time. We had 10 dimensions, okay? So when we varied this, we found something of this form for the boundary terms. Okay? That's what we found. And we studied different ways of setting this boundary condition, these boundary terms to zero. Of course, we miss one, which is actually the simplest way of setting this thing to zero, which is just to declare say, you can set things to zero by killing this guy together with this guy by imposing periodic boundary conditions, right? You could also do the same thing for the other terms. Now, but there is something interesting here that didn't happen in the case when we had bosons, right? So here we are killing this term with this term, and this term with this term. What's the interesting possibility that didn't arise when we had bosons? When we only had the excess, we can only impose that they were periodic, right? And that gave us the nice boundary condition for a closed string. In this case, remember, each term, look at each term. Each term is actually quadratic. So what can we do to the size? We can actually make them, if we allow the size to be periodic, we satisfy the boundary conditions, but we could also allow for a minus sign. So we could also allow them to be anti-periodic. Okay? So when we choose periodic boundary conditions, we call these boundary conditions Raman boundary conditions. And when we choose anti-periodic boundary conditions, we call these NS boundary conditions. Okay? Now you see that I can choose R or NS boundary conditions for these guys or for these guys. So how many possibilities do I have? I have two for each, so I have a total of four possibilities. So people like to call these as four sectors. So we have four possible sectors. And guess what? The names are a little bit boring. You have the RR sector, the RNS sector, the NSR sector, and the NS sector. What else? Okay. So now you know what it means, right? So if I tell you NSR sector, what do you have to do? You have to impose anti-periodic boundary conditions on these guys and periodic boundary conditions on these guys. Okay? All right, so our next job is to compute the spectrum. Once again, we can proceed with the whole structure of constraints, the same thing that we did for the open string, and we will find that all the oscillators, remember, all these guys, I'm violating the rule that I proposed last week, which was that the guys, when they were by themselves, I was going to exhibit the space-time index. While when they were contracted, I wasn't going to do it. But here, I didn't do it here. Okay. So in the expansion, we will also have zero. We will also have states that will generate negative norm states in the Hilbert space. So that's bad. But just as we did in the open string, the constraints are powerful enough so that we can get rid of all the psi plus oscillators and solve for the psi minus oscillators. Now, plus and minus refers to what? What do you think? Am I talking about this plus and minus? No. Which plus and minus am I talking about? When I say that, which ones? Yeah, so there will be the oscillators, but which oscillators? So the oscillators will have a B mu. Remember, there are oscillators in the NS sector and oscillators in the R sector. When I mean pluses or minuses, that I want to get rid of all pluses and then use the constraints to solve for the minuses, what do I mean by plus and minus? Is there? No.
That's not the case. No. Equation I is
no. Okay. So remember, in the usual coordinates in space-time, the bad hot oscillators are where? In the time component, right? In the zero component. What was the trick we used to get rid of them? We first had to make a change of coordinates. We went to which coordinates? To Lycon coordinates. And in Lycon coordinates, the mu indices were plus, minus, and I indices, right? Right? So these are the transverse modes, and these are the Lycon coordinates, okay? This is in space-time, okay? Do you remember all that? We said, let's do it with the axes. The axes look more familiar. We said that the x plus minus was square root of 2 x0 plus minus x d minus 1. Okay? And the same thing with the fermions. Now, we are talking about the space-time index, okay? Plus and minus. So the terrible oscillators, the bad oscillators, the ones that produce negative norm states hide where? They hide here and here. And we said that with the constraints, we could kill all the oscillators here and kill all the oscillators here. So no oscillators here. And from the constraints, we didn't use the constraints for this. What did we use for this? Do you remember? We use a residual symmetry on the world sheet to actually get rid of these guys and write this. Maybe this will ring a bell. With a tilde. We kill all these oscillators. And here we set this to zero. We use a residual symmetry on the world sheet, and it was conformal symmetry. In the superstring, it was super conformal symmetry. Okay? We assume that that symmetry was a good symmetry of the quantum theory. Remember, we just put our chips and bet on that fact. That conformal symmetry was going to be a good symmetry. We use it to kill the oscillators here. Okay? Now the constraints could be used to find this as a function of these guys, and then we were done. Okay? But then we found that we don't win all the time, right? Because Lorentz invariant was broken, was anomalous, telling us that there was an anomaly in the symmetry we used to do these steps, unless the dimension was correct and the normal order ambiguity is fixed to be correct. Okay? So all that is just to say that here too, we will only build the states with the transverse oscillators. Okay? So all these guys are gone, and only the transverse guys will play a role. So let's try to build the spectrum. Okay? The spectrum actually depends on what do we do with the Ramon ground states on each of the two sides, on the left movers and on the right movers. We have two choices, remember. We can choose the Ramon ground state to be of positive chirality or negative chirality, right? So we can choose the Ramon sector to be one or the other. So let's start and say that we choose the positive chirality on both sides. Okay. Now we're going to try to write all the states we can that are consistent with the GSO projection. Okay. We could start by saying, well, imagine that we have a ground state in the Navier-Schwarz sector cross anything on the other side, on the right movers. On the left movers, we choose the ground state in the Navier-Schwarz sector. Well, this is bad, right? Our GSO projection kills that, okay? So there are no states with just the ground state in the Navier-Schwarz sector, because our GSO projection on the left gives minus one to this state, and we don't want that. So we are applying the GSO projection on each side, and we're killing these states. On the Ramon sector, we are fine. We can choose one condition on one side and another one on the other side. Here I'm choosing every Ramon sector, every ground state will be the one with plus chirality on the left and on the right, okay? So this is clearly massless, right? What else can I do to get a massless state? Well, I could do this cross the ground state in the Navier-Schwarz sector, okay? This is the ground state after the GSO projection, so I can use it freely here. Now, here too, I could do the same thing. Now, remember that in the closed string, we have two sets of oscillators, and we distinguish them by putting a tilde on one and not a tilde on the other one. Okay? Now, we could also have two of these guys together. Now, of course, this is what we call the NS sector, right? Two NS on both sides. What do we get? What states do we get? This is a vector under SO8, and this is a vector under SO8. So we have two vectors of SO8. When we decompose, is the tensor product of two vectors an irreducible representation of SO8? No. What are the irreducible components? Do you remember we did it last time, and somebody even corrected me, I think it was you, that I had a 1 over something in the trace, that when I tried to remove the trace, I didn't do it correctly. That's a hint, right? Okay, you might be confused because I didn't put a J here. Let's keep this guy. So this is a general A by A matrix. How can I decompose a general A by A matrix into pieces that don't mix under an SO8 rotation? That's it. Yeah. So we get the trace. People call it a one because it's only one state. Okay. So what's the next one? An anti-symmetric tensor under SO8. How many components are there? Yes?
Sorry, why do three of these beads have tildes and one of these?
Because this one doesn't have. Thank you. Excellent. And the symmetric one. You will see why I put this here. It means that there are other 35 dimensional representations that we're going to find, but I just put a V here to remind myself that this is actually a mass. This one is a rank 2 traceless tensor. So this is also what we call our graviton, okay? What was this? Do you remember? This state, the B field. And it was very important because it's the guy that couples to the string, okay? It's like the gauge potential for a particle. The gauge potential for the string has to be an anti-symmetric rank 2 tensor, which defines a 2-form gauge potential or a 3-form field strength, which we call H, if you remember. Okay. And this guy was what we call phi, the dilaton. Okay. So let's see. Now we have to continue. Let's go for this one. Well, this one looks a little bit tricky. This is a tensor product of two spinners. Okay. I don't think I asked you guys last time to in the tutorial when you studied the representations, the spinor representations of SO groups. I don't think you did the tensor product of, right? You didn't do it, right? No, I didn't ask you to do it. Yeah. Well, that requires a little bit of Lie groups to compute the reduction of the tensor product of two spinor representations of the same chirality. So I'll just give you the answer. Okay? So the answer looks funny. How come, right? And we put a plus here to remember that it's not the same as this guy. This guy, in fact, I'll tell you what it is. So this guy is just a scalar that we call C0. This guy is a 2-form that we call C2. And this guy is actually a 4-form that we call C4. Well, some people also call this lambda, and some people call this BNBRR. Okay. And what's the notation for the last guy? Oh, some people like to call this one a D. Okay. They call this one BRR to distinguish it from the other one, right? Here we got a 2-form, and people write NS. To remind you that this came from the NSNSX sector, and this guy came from the RR sector. Okay, it's also 2-form, but in the RR sector. Okay. So these are all bosons, but they all look like gauge potentials too. Okay, so an interesting question is: well, if this guy is the source of the string, what could these guys be sourcing? And this plus means that the field strength of this guy, which is a 5-form, is actually self-dual. Okay? So we have to impose a self-duality condition. Otherwise, the number of degrees of freedom will not be 35. Okay? Now we are remaining. The remaining guys are here. These guys, we will have to compute what they are and also the decomposition. I'll just tell you what it is. Yes. This one is a 4-form, right? Potential whose field strength is a 5-form. Okay. So the condition that you impose is that the field strength is self-dual. Okay. Now, in this case, remember, this is a boson, and this is a fermion. So what we get in the representation is just a product, is just a fermion too, which is decomposed as the sum of two irreducible representations, which are fermionic themselves. Okay? So this guy is, as usual, a spinor, right? It's in the spinor representation. It's a massless spinor. This guy, too, is a spinor. This guy is a new object we were looking for. This guy is a spinor that also has a vector index. So this one is a gravitino. Okay? Chi. Now, how many gravitini we have? We have two. And how many? Well, they call these dilatinos, for the lack of a better name. Okay? Note the following. They both have the same chirality. Okay? So let's try to summarize what we got when we made the choice that the Ramon sector both had the same chirality. Okay? So let's do it here. We only need 5 more minutes and we'll be done. So the choice we made, same chirality for both our ground states. So we got, in our bosons, we got our friends that we like. Okay, from the Navier-Schwarz sector. But we also got extra bosons, C0, C2, and C4 plus, okay? Or as I said, lambda, BRR, or D. Okay? And fermions, we got, so let's put an index here. This index I is to tell us that it goes from 1 to 2, okay? And this is a gravitino, 2 gravitini, and the dilatino, 2 of those 2, okay? And this is what we found. Now we have 2 guys here. This index I should remind you of something. This index I is actually the same as the index I that I was drawing in 4 dimensions. It actually tells you the number of supersymmetries, okay? So this index I is telling you that you have 2 supersymmetries. Okay? Just as we did in 4 dimensions, we had an index I too. Okay? And that's why this theory is called as a 2. And the choice we made for the Ramon sector, ground states, meaning same chiralities, is called the B choice. So this is called type 2B. Okay? So this is a massless field content of the type 2B closed string theory, superstring theory. Okay? Note the following. All these spinors have plus chirality, right? So this is a chiral supergravity theory. Because it has spinors of a given chirality, but not the other. So now we can finish by studying the other choice. So the other choice will give us a different string theory. It will not be equivalent to this one, at least not in 10 dimensions. So what will be the other theory? So let's make a choice. Let's keep the Ramon state on this side. Well, just one thing. If we chose minus minus, it will give us exactly the same theory, an equivalent theory, so we will not make the choice. So we have to choose different chiralities for the Ramon sectors. So let's choose on this side to have minus, okay? And on this side, we will keep the plus and try to repeat the same exercise. Note that I almost succeeded in not erasing this part, which is exactly the same as before. Okay? So the NS sector stays the same because it doesn't depend on the Ramon, on the choice of the Ramon state. Okay? But all these guys will change. Now what happens to these guys? So these guys end up giving you a C1 and a C3, meaning a 1-form and a 3-form gauge fields. Okay? So this is an A mu, and this is a C mu rho. Okay? Remember, these are the gauge potentials. So now we are generalizing everything we knew, because now we can have gauge potentials with any number of indices, which are any number of forms, which are forms of any degree. And we can define the field strength by taking the exterior derivative of them. Okay? But that's what we have in this sector. Of course, I didn't write the dimensions, so we have 8 here and 56 here. Okay. Now, this guy was the same that we had before. It was an 8 plus 56. It's all funny, right? Because these guys are bosons, and these guys are fermions. So this is 8 vector, and this one is 8 plus and 56 plus, because it comes from the plus, and this will be an 8 minus and 56 minus. So these guys, again, are the Latinos and Gravitinos. Okay? But know that they have different chirality. Okay? The minus means negative chirality, and here the plus means plus chirality. Okay? So you might wonder, how come that bosons and fermions, from the point of view of representation theory, they all look more or less the same? Spinors and bosons, they more or less satisfy the same properties. And the reason, which we are not going to explain, but just so that you, when you see it, you know. Do you remember the Dynkin diagram of SO8? The Dynkin diagram was something like this. Remember? Well, associated to each of these nodes, there is a particular representation. Associated to these two nodes, there is the spinor representations of plus and negative chirality. And associated to this one, there is a vector representation. In general, it's like this. So the vector sits here, and the spinor's here. So the vector, in general, is very different from these guys. Very, very different. But for SO8, something special happens. For SO8, precisely for SO8, the three guys actually look isomorphic to each other, okay? And that's the reason there are all these similarities in the decompositions, okay? I won't explain this more, but just so that you don't see this as magic or think that this is something that will happen in general. This is very special for SO8, okay? So let's write the field content of the other choice. We will also have two supersymmetries, okay? There is an index that tells us that we are here or here. Okay? And this choice is called the type 2-8. So the bosons, we have the same NS sector. But we have our fields here. And for fermions, we have the two different chiralities, okay? So this is called a non-chiral supergravity. And the reason, of course, is that we have both chiralities present in the theory. Okay, so let me conclude by just mentioning something about terminology. It looks a little bit confusing to talk about this as n equals 2 supergravities in 10 dimensions, or having 2 supersymmetries. Why is it confusing? Because you have to mention the word 10 dimensions. If we are talking about 4 dimensions, okay, we also talk about n equals 4 supergermials and so on. But remember, we just said that in 10 dimensions, if we have a theory with only one supersymmetry in 10 dimensions, which has the gauge field and the gaugino, remember we said that this was connected to n equals 4 super Young mills in 4 dimensions. Okay? Is there any invariant way of talking about the amount of supersymmetry? The answer is yes. Here, we are saying that we have 4 supercharges, but each supercharge contains, 4 generators of SUSY, but each guy is a 4-dimensional object. Okay? So we count the number of components, the total number of components. That's what I want. That's a proposal for the new way of talking about supersymmetry. We have four guys, and each guy has 4 entries. Each of these guys is called a supercharge. So how many supercharges we have? In this case, this is a theory with 16 supercharges. Okay. How many supercharges are here? Well, we only have n equals 1, right? So we only have 1 supercharge. Only 1 Q, but how many components are there? This is just a Majorana spinner. So there will be 16 components. This means that there are 16 supercharges. Okay? Now, can anyone add up all these numbers? Plus, how many you get?
How many?
256. Oh. Have you seen 256 before?
I didn't see the numbers
in the book. Oh, sorry, yeah. No, all these numbers. All the numbers you see here. So somebody computed that and found 256. How many bosons and how many fermions? Well, the claim is that we had supersymmetry, so there had to be the same number of bosons and fermions. So if you add up these guys only, you should find the same as adding up these guys. And you should find 128 plus 128. Have you seen this before? Do you remember the other exercise that I asked you to do? The same thing in 4 dimensions, but now starting with minus 2, a helicity minus 2 guy. How many supersymmetries you needed to go all the way to something that had plus 2? You need 8 supersymmetries. Okay. And this guy was QI minus 3 half, so we had 8 guys here, and so on, 56, 70, and so on. Okay? Do you remember? Until we got to 1. And the total number of states was 256, the number of bosons was 128, and the number of fermions was 128. Well, let's count the number of supercharges. How many supercharges? We said that each Q contains 4. So we get 4 times 8 is 32 supercharges. Well, let's look at this theory here. That's the theory we were studying there. Well, the theory has 2 supersymmetries in 10 dimensions, which means each supersymmetry is a 16-dimensional object. So we also have 32 supercharges. So in fact, both guys, here and here, they are theories with 32 supercharges. Guess what? It turns out that if you take the theory, this theory, and you dimensionally reduce it on a torus, you will find this theory. So I leave it as an exercise for you to try to get, as we did with the 6, do you remember the meaning of the 6? Well, try to get the same thing for these numbers. Try to give a meaningful explanation for what these guys are. Okay? Any questions? Yeah, I remember.
How do you get the 6?
Not here. Oh, last time, okay. When we did with this guy. Well, because in 10 dimensions, this guy has 10 indices. 4 of them are space-time, and we're taking the other 6 to be compactified. So we're doing a Kaluza-Klein compactification. So the other guys will have a 0 mode, which will be massless. And the 0 mode, from the point of view of 4-dimensional space-time, would be scalar. So you get 6 scalars.
I understand what you mean by compactifying the dimensions, but
Why is the number 6? What is it? What does it mean? You wrote down that you get the six scalars or something. How do you get that?
Each component A4, A5, A6, A7, 8, and A9, each of them, I can call it phi 1, phi 2. These are 6 scalars. Each component of these fields will turn out into a scalar. But don't worry, you will do part of that tomorrow in the tutorial. Okay, so there is a chance that today I might be able to come back. I'm not completely sure. For some family reasons, but because I want to do an extra lecture today. The extra lecture will not be something that is needed for the course. I mean, something that you need for the homework or anything. So you are free to come if you want. So don't feel obligated. The lecture will be, if it happens, will be at 4, from 4 to 5. And the whole lecture will just be a review for those of you who know it, or an introduction for those of you who haven't seen it, of complex geometry. Okay? And the goal is to get to the definition of a Calabi-Yau manifold. So that will be the lecture today. I'll let you know around 2 if I can actually make it. And the last thing is that I'll have to run home now. So I won't be able to stay for lunch once again. Sorry about that. Yeah, we had an appointment today with some of you to have lunch. So let's move it until tomorrow.
Can it be?
No, but it's just going to be very basic. You cannot make it? Let's see. Okay.